continued practice of even asana and a systematized effort at methodical breathing creates in oneself a new kind of power and energy, which otherwise gets dissipated on account of the natural distracted condition of the body. A regularized practice, even of simple physical posture, the meditative pose, and a normal, healthy practice of breathing will create a tendency in the powers of the body to unite themselves together into a new kind of force which attracts things towards itself. A gradual capacity to exert influence on one's atmosphere rises automatically in oneself. Your personality becomes a center of attraction. Not that you dress yourself, comb yourself, or have any kind of makeup of the body for the sake of attraction, but certain changes that take place within the body create an internal atmosphere of attraction of everything that is around oneself. The capacity has various other aspects also, namely the ability to withstand the pairs of opposites, namely such things as even heat and cold, hunger and thirst, and such psychological opposites as joy and sorrow. You will not be suddenly roused to happiness on account of anything, nor will you sink into grief even if the worst thing happens. The body, in a collaboration with the mind, will be able to bear everything in the world. That fortitude is a kind of strength which gets newly generated in oneself. Even if you fall sick by chance, you will recover quickly and not be on bed for years in a hospital. A new kind of capacity to rejuvenate oneself also arises in the system, though there may be a sudden fall of health for various reasons, such as fever, headache, and so on and so forth. This strength is not ordinary strength. It is the strength of the tendency to unity of powers. It is not the power that we think of ordinarily in the world, such as social strength, political strength, or the strength of status in the public. The temporary strength that we gain by eating a good meal and all that, this is another kind of strength altogether, which will keep you sane and stable even in an atmosphere of conflict, dissension and tension. Even if you are placed in an atmosphere of severe conflict, you will not be affected by this conflict. You will be able to understand rather than react. The capacity to withstand the impulse to reaction is one of the consequences, one of the results that follow from the practice continuously of asana and pranayama. You become a little different from other people, and that difference is precisely in your being able to tend yourself to a centrality of your being rather than to the objects of sense. The greater is the tendency to the acquisition of this knowledge, the greater also is a power, because real power is the same as knowledge. Knowledge is power. Where there is knowledge, power has to be. But this knowledge is not book learning. It is not a qualification of the academies. It is a knowledge which is identical with being, about which we were discussing in its few aspects the other day. Knowledge associated with being is also power, because power is only another name for the expression of being. While the common man's notion is one of artificial contact with the facilities and instruments of action, the power to wield instruments of action is not real power, because when the instruments are withdrawn, the power also goes. Suppose you have a gun, you seem to have a power with you. When the gun is not there, you have no power. But the yoga power is not of that kind. You don't require a gun or a knife or a sword in your hand. It is a power that is manifest by your own being. And that power cannot be snatched away from you. The manifestation of this power can also be felt personally in one's own self, not merely by others, though others also may feel it on occasions, as in a beautiful aphorism Patanjali mentions the consequences of self-control. Rupa, Lavanya, Bala, Vajra, Sammananatvadi, Ayasampa. The personality assumes a luster. There is a new kind of light emanating from your eyes, which can influence the atmosphere outside. Even a violent person may become calm in your presence because of a new kind of vibration that you spread around you. And any kind of doubt or conflict may get cleared up in your presence. Because doubts and conflicts are the children of weddedness to diversity. And wherever there is a power that is born of unity or the sense of unity, there cannot be doubt, there cannot be conflict or tension. There is a peculiar kind of beauty, not the beauty which the senses see occasionally when they are excited due to their selfishness. But a real beauty which is capable of acting like a magnet around its atmosphere. You will be beautiful even if you have no clothes to wear, even if you have not taken a bath. That beauty will not vanish. Whereas we are under the impression that beauty increases by dress and appearance, etc., brought about by artificial appurtenances. The beauty that is injected into the personality by the practice of yoga is a natural concomitance of the essential nature of your being, and it will be there always. Some of the yoga scriptures go to the extent of even saying that even the celestials are drawn towards you due to the grandeur of your personality. Celestials, not merely the people of the world. Lavanya is another word which Patanjali uses. There is a tenderness of your personality together with that strength of your being. There is a beautiful combination of strength and tenderness combined in your personality. You are an unshakable being. The logic of the world and the treasures of the earth cannot shake you easily. And the power of fortitude sustains you at all times. You become an indomitable figure in your thinking and in your actions. Your decisions become firm, and you need not go on scratching your head to come to a conclusion about important issues. Things become clear at once on the very face of these appearances. But at the same time, you become a very tender personality with an ability to feel the feelings of others. A great virtue indeed, on account of which you do not react to atmospheres. The virtue of the yogi is understanding rather than retaliation or wreaking vengeance or reaction of any kind. He does not get stirred up by stimuli from the outside world. He is not a slave. Because he is a master. So, a peculiar softness of nature gets combined with the hardness of power. Vajradapi kathorani, mruduni kusumadapi. Yogis are described as harder than diamond and softer than the petal of lotus. You cannot do anything to them, such strong people they are. But nobody can be so soft as they are also. That is Lavanya combined with Bala. Rupa, Lavanya, Bala, beauty, magnificence, a magnetic personality, strength. All these follow gradually as a necessary result of your sustained effort at bringing together the powers of your personality, which are dissipated by sensory activity, egoistic affirmation, and desires of various kinds. To put them down, it is that we take to the practice of yoga. We have not come to that stage of yoga where our consciousness gets identified with the powers of the world. We are still in a very, very low stage. In the bare stage of the attempt at sitting in a single posture and breathing normally, in a sustained, harmonized manner, even these simple practices, continued for a protracted period, will bring about their own result. Because even the first step in yoga is yoga itself. Jijnasurabhi yoga se shabda brahmadi vartate. Even an aspiration to know God is such a virtue that it surpasses all other charitable deeds of the world. Because the desire to know God is to be regarded as the fruit of immense virtues accumulated in previous lives. Nobody can desire God unless it is a flowering of immense past effort of many lives through which one has lived. Thus, we are enthused by this great solacing feature that is in our life called yoga, which many of the scriptures refer to as more compassionate than a mother, dearer than a mother. The most loving person in the world is one's own mother. And this yoga is supposed to be dearer than mother herself, because it will take care of you more than a mother. Wherever you are and whenever you are in trouble, the mother keeps a kind eye upon you. But yoga will keep a kinder eye, and it will see that you do not come to a difficulty of any kind. This yoga is not a person that is taking care of you like an outside being, as a mother. It is something that is happening within you, yourself. Na deva dandam udyamya rakshanti pashupalavat, says the Mahabharata. When the higher powers make up their minds to take care of you, they do not protect you like a shepherd with a stick in his hand going after his sheep. Because these divine powers are not persons who are wandering outside in the world like soldiers. They are powers within yourself, which when they are awakened, begin to guard you, because you have bestowed thought upon them. These powers, whatever we seek, in fact, is in ourselves. One of the greatest miraculous discoveries of the philosophy of yoga is that whatever we seek is in ourselves. It is not outside. Because there is no such thing as outside. The concept of outside is an illusion that is created by a peculiar structural defect in the activity of the mind. Just as there is a false outsideness in dream, while there is such no such thing as that, there is no such thing as externality even in the waking world. Don't you see a vast external world in dream? Something disconnected from you? But is that really disconnected? And you know very well how even the vast world that you see in dream is connected with you. And the externality of that so-called world there is a falsity created by a peculiar movement of the mind. So is this externality that keeps us cut off from the world of nature. The world is not outside us, because the very idea or the notion of outside is an erroneous effect produced by a kink in the mind, and therefore yoga again and again points out that the only thing that we have to do is to set right the mind. Yoga chitta vritti nirodha. There is nothing else that is to be done except to set right the mind. We are trying to set right the world instead of setting right the mind, as if something is wrong with the world. What is wrong is in the head, in the mind, in the way of thinking, in the movement of what we call the psychological apparatus in ourselves. That which has made us feel that we are in a world of externalized space and time, that has to be set right. And the yoga does not therefore concern itself with setting right the world or covering the whole earth with the gold sheets, etc. Because all these things are not necessary. What is necessary is to remove that disharmony between ourselves and the world or the universe, on account of which we are not only miserable in our own selves, in our personal lives, but also we have wrong notions about our other people and the other things in the world. This mind, which is a mischief maker, has created such a havoc that it has created in us a perpetual wrong notion about our own selves and a consequent wrong notion about everything else. We think something is wrong with us and something is wrong with everybody else in the world. All this is due to the absorption of our mind in a peculiar, ununderstandable feature called the notion of diversity. It is very difficult to understand what it means. And the mind survives only by creating this confusion. If everything becomes clear, the mind cannot exist. There are many people in this world who somehow or other get on by creating a state of confusion. And such a confusion they create that it becomes a source of strength for them. And they would not allow others to think correctly. by either shouting loudly or bringing about such a state of affairs that people's minds are sidetracked and they cannot think the actual problem on hand. And that is the source of their strength. Many politicians do like that. And his mind is the master politician. It has simply thrown everything in a state of confusion. And not only it has done that, but it has also created a feeling in everybody that what it has done is right, and that is the only correct state of affairs. So there is no chance of our even retracing our steps from this confused condition, because we have already assumed that what steps we are taking and the condition in which we are is perfectly okay. If there is a state of confusion, and if we are convinced also that the state of confusion is the right thing and the proper state of affairs, this is what is called confusion worse confounded. Now therefore, there is no remedy for this illness of the mind than an internal rearrangement of the pattern of thinking itself. You have heard this sutra, yoga chitta vritti nirodha, so many times. Yoga is the procedure adopted in restraining the modifications of the mind. All this is only a kind of slogan for us. You go on reading it 1,000 times, it makes no sense. Because neither we can know what mind is, nor what vrittis are, what modifications of the mind mean, and how they can be controlled. All these things are beyond ordinary people's approach. And when you come to the actual serious practice of it, you will be repelled by it because it looks terrifying. In the beginning, yoga is a terrifying something. It is a fearful object. Very painful. But that pain and the terror that is there is on account of our inability to adjust ourselves with it. Yattadagre vishamiva parinami amrutopam tatsugam sattvikam proktam atmabuddhi prasadayam. The happiness or the bliss that yoga brings is that which brings ultimate satisfaction to the reason and the soul, but which looks bitter in the beginning, though nectar-like in the end. This is real, pure and unmixed happiness. It is very unpalatable in the beginning, otherwise everybody would have taken to a serious practice of it. It is unpalatable because it is repulsive to the desires of the senses. And we live in a world of the senses. We are slaves of the senses. There is nothing before us except a sensory world. So anything that is a little different from what the senses regard as valuable or pleasurable to them is bitter, unfavorable, not desirable. Therefore, very few people can take to this. Manushyanam sahasrero kaschi jagati siddhe. Among thousands of people, one may take to this path. And even to the, among those who have taken to the practice of it, very few alone succeed in it. Merely because you have filed a petition for election, it does not mean that you will be elected. Very difficult it is. It requires hard effort. And hard effort is precisely, for the time being, regularity of practice. Whatever be the extent of your understanding of the practice, let it be regular. In all successful endeavors, regularity is to be made an essential or the essential, the most essential feature. Even if nothing else is possible, at least sitting alone in a fixed posture or asana must be possible. If nothing else is possible, will this at least not be possible? The mind and the body will both get adjusted to this discipline that you are imposing upon them. Seatedness in a posture for a period of time is a great discipline, because the mind is averse to every kind of discipline. Any kind of system is disliked by the mind. It always likes confusion. And the least discipline that you introduce into it produces in the mind a reaction and a resentment. Even for 10 minutes, it won't allow you to sit in one posture. You will change your posture, look this way or that way. Even when you walk on the road, you want to see all the shops. You have nothing to purchase from the shops, but you will see this way, that way. This is a distraction of the mind. And for this aim of success that we are seeking through practice, a conducive atmosphere is necessary, as already been mentioned. And we already assume that we are in such an atmosphere where factors which are too distracting are absent. And facilities for the practice are available. An ashram is of such a nature. Distractive forces are absent, facilities for practice are available. We are in such an atmosphere. And now, a will is necessary. What is required now is a determination, a power of thinking, and a decision that has to be made by one's own self. But as the making of this decision is not an easy affair by a mind which has been used to pleasures and comforts and distractions, diversions, etc., easier methods of practice should be taken resort to in the beginning rather than severe practices. You must be able to find out what is the kind of practice or what aspect of yoga will be suitable to the present condition of your body and mind. And be firm in that for a considerable period of time, and then you will find that like the gradual ripening of a fruit from inside, there will be a strengthening of the personality from within and a maturity of the whole being from inside, gradually expressing itself, manifesting itself outside. The ripening of the fruits commences from inside. It is not always seen outside. It takes a lot of time to be seen outside. And many seekers may be dejected or feel a sense of melancholy mood because the ripening is not visible outside. They will say, I have been doing so many things for so many days and months and years, nothing is coming out. You cannot always know if anything is coming out at all. Because even when success is apparent, it will not be strongly visible outside. It will not be visible always until, of course, it comes to the highest. And therefore, patience is one of the watchwords in yoga. You should not go on feeling a sense of diffidence in ourselves. And we may remember the great advice of the Bhagavad Gita. Don't go on looking at the fruit. Whether the fruit is coming or not, well, the fruit will be taken care of automatically. You do your duty of practice from the bottom of your heart, with the best of your knowledge, the greatest discipline possible, and the fruit will come in due time. Hari Om.